Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
Today we're discussing affordable used cars and the future of office life.
Hey man, guess what? School is out.
Although it kind of almost felt like it's been out for 2 months.
It's officially out, yeah, but school's been out for a week, even though it hasn't looked that much different than our day-to-day lives over the past several months.
But I think it has changed the dynamic a little bit, and it is kind of nice that summer is actually here, at least for us down here in the Southeast. And I know it's school system to school system, county by county, kind of right now of when school's wrapping up. And yeah, but it's nice to have it done. I feel like we're doing more outside exploring because no Zoom calls for the kids.
Well, all schools are out by Memorial Day, right?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
Yeah, no.
What schools are going to take a long weekend, like right before the schools are out for good?
Yeah, it sure does seem like Memorial Day should be the cutoff. Odd.
Yeah, it should always be the cutoff. If it's not, it should be.
If we ran the world, you know, that's what would happen.
But. Or a school system, well, which also probably should not happen. Yeah.
We barely know how to run this podcast, Matt, so maybe we'll just stick to that. But all right, let's get on to kind of some of the stories that we want to tackle today on the podcast. We're going to call the roundup of stories that we're tackling on Friday shows, the Friday flight for now, at least. And it's basically a quick sampling of a bunch of different stories that we found interesting. And our goal is to show how the current events actually impact all of our wallets as individuals, right?
Well, and the reason we're calling it the Friday flight is because we had to have a little beer tie-in, right? And if you go to a brewery, typically, you get a flight of beers. It's a little sampling of, you know, maybe 4 to 6 beers, whatever, just a few ounces, but it allows you to get a taste of it without you having to commit all in to one specific beer.
Yeah.
And so that's why we're calling this the Friday Flight, because it allows us to touch on several little stories that we think are important.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I love the name. Love that we're going to be able to tackle a lot of different information on these Friday episodes.
Even though on Friday episodes, that's the only episode that we don't share a beer, which is kind of a bummer.
Well, yeah, but we have enough beer in our lives.
That is true.
So first story up, Netflix is automatically going to be canceling inactive subscriptions. How cool is that, Matt? Right? That's easy money for the giant streaming provider. So to see them proactively canceling accounts and cutting off that income stream for themselves in order to put money back in consumers' pockets, I think is admirable. I've never heard of any other company doing the upstanding thing and canceling a subscription that's inactive where no one's logged into the account. They've actually used the service for a year or two. Those typically are the most lucrative. Those are the customers that you want, right? The people that completely forgot that they were paying that monthly bill.
Yeah, I think it's super cool. First of all, I think it's interesting whenever a company does something completely different than what all the other similar companies are doing. So that in and of itself is interesting to me. But the fact that it happens to also be something that is better for us, this is in our own best interest. And so does it actually make Netflix a fiduciary? Because they're doing what is better for our personal finances. I love that. And the way it works is that if you've created an account with Netflix and you've never watched anything, you'll get a cancellation notice within a year. But if you have watched videos and, you know, TV on Netflix, then it'll be 2 years before you get that cancellation notice. I think in an era where we all are probably subscribed to too many things, this is a breath of fresh corporate air.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's important for people to note if they do have, like you said, probably a lot of reoccurring subscriptions that they've forgotten about, come through your credit card statement and see what sort of subscriptions that you do have that are active. And you're like, oh man, I haven't used that in a long time. Oh, I still have that showing up on my doorstep. Yeah, I don't really care about that anymore. It's a perfect reminder that we should be canceling our own subscriptions that we're not using anymore. But if you forget, in the case of Netflix, at least they're going to do you a solid if you haven't logged in quite a bit. All right, Matt, another interesting thing I saw this week. I think we've all seen a few awkward advertisements at this point in the lockdown and quarantine. And there was an interesting article in Slate. There was another one in the New York Times kind of covering what we're all thinking, at least to a certain degree, that some of the ads we're seeing on TV and streaming services right now, they've gotten just a little bit weird, right? They're definitely not normal. And companies, I think, are doing their best to speak to the moment, right? They're saying things like, we're all in this together, or they're touting their increased cleaning procedures. Some of those things are helpful to know, for
sure.
It's
like the whole hand washing thing. It's like, wait, you should always be washing your hands, you know?
I wash my hands for a half hour, though, now. So, yeah, and the Zoom call humor seems to be a current favorite, too, for a lot of brands. And I got to say, I might be ready to go back to normal everyday crummy brand ads. It's interesting to see how these companies are trying to at least speak to the moment and do something a little different. And I understand the necessity of it. But I think, you know, most of us have noticed that ads have gotten a lot more awkward. It's kind of tough to hit that right note in advertising these days.
Yeah, there definitely have been some big misses, I'll say that. But I don't know, maybe it's because of my history, like my past being in the advertising industry. But to me, like, they're not all that awkward. Like, they are a reflection of just the world we live in, which is, I think, maybe why it does feel weird. It's not what we're used to seeing, and I think we're all ready for this to basically all be over, right? And so when we see it sort of reflected back to us on TV via these ads, especially television ads, that's what feels weird, right? Yeah. But the way I see it, advertising is typically a reflection of society. And so they use that to communicate a message to us, or, you know, just to convince us to buy their stuff, which is often the case. But when we do see something on there that isn't what we want to see, that's when it feels awkward, right? Because it's just like, oh, I don't want that to be my life. It makes it feel that it's maybe more permanent than we want it to be. I think that's what feels weird about it to me. To me, that's the craziest part, is when we start asking the questions of how long is this actually going to be impacting us, to where it's just kind of normal and we see in advertisements like that. But yeah, man, that was a pretty funny article. Another article we came across was one that was on food delivery apps. A lot of us are familiar with Postmates, Grubhub, but they can take a really big piece of the pie when it comes to the total cost, right? Local restaurants, they're starting to kick them to the curb. Those delivery apps are booming right now, though, as more folks are opting for home delivery. But those apps do take a giant cut of the individual restaurant bottom lines. You know, when this was only a small portion of restaurant revenue, partnering with these apps made a lot of sense for the different restaurants. But with takeout being the sole income producer right now, though, a lot of restaurants are creating their own online order taking and delivery systems to cut out that expensive middleman.
Yeah, Matt, out of necessity, restaurants have basically had to do this because, what, between 10 and 30% of the amount that you're spending is going to the delivery apps like Uber Eats or Grubhub or whatever. And so, yeah, restaurants have to fight back, and they have to claw back that money by enabling you to order directly through them via their website. So I would say look to order directly from your favorite restaurant instead, so that they will get all of that money, even if they are on one of those apps, which make it easy. And maybe go pick it up instead of opting for delivery. I know sometimes that can save the restaurant's money too.
Well, yeah, that's the biggest cost, right? The fact that it's delivered to you, which, dude, I've never really understood the delivery apps, you know, like, especially with folks working from home. Like, aren't folks looking for an opportunity to get out of their house
and do something? And it's, yeah, a pretty safe activity to pick up, you know, take out food.
Absolutely. It's just a change of scenery at the very least. I know for me, as someone who's worked from home for over 10 years, like, having something different to do to kind of break up the day is, you know, welcomed. And so I think hopping in the car, or even better, getting on your bike and just biking there to pick up your food. Man, in my mind, that's way better than going with the food delivery service.
I'm with you, man. I've never gotten on board either. Yeah. I mean, it's simple. It's easy. That's why people do it. But the cost is prohibitive for the restaurants and for you. It adds in a lot of extra cost to your takeout order if you choose to get it delivered.
Yeah. Like, it just seems like it's solving a problem that isn't a real problem. Like, certainly there are some individuals who might be homebound, right? And it's like a true service that they need. But for everyone else, I feel like it's just there at a convenience. It's like, oh, I've got this app on my phone. Let me just browse the food. Yeah. Whoop. Oh, there's food at my door. Cool. Yeah, you know?
Exactly.
It's like the digital equivalent of kind of like going to your fridge and just like opening the door and staring at it for a little bit.
Like kids like to do, yeah, oftentimes. And me too sometimes. But yeah, and on the restaurant note, Matt, as well, COVID surcharges are kind of becoming more and more common. And that's because, too, of lower profits and increased costs of running a business right now. You might see menu prices increasing, or you might actually even see a line item on your bill that reflects this need for an additional fee right now. It might even be called a COVID fee or a coronavirus fee. And other small businesses are facing similar issues of being able to serve fewer customers at a time, increased cleaning costs, stuff like that. So if you see one of those line items, it's okay to ask about it, but also know that a lot of businesses have to raise their prices right now because of the pandemic and because of how difficult it's been to actually continue to do business and function like normal.
Yeah, these higher prices and surcharges, man, like, it is for additional work involved, right? With maintaining clean spaces and the cost of protective equipment and cleaning supplies. I saw in an article that there's a dentist in New York City. He estimates that his costs have risen between $25 and $50 per patient visit because of the equipment he now uses. And here's the thing, too. I think these higher costs are not just okay, but like good and necessary, right? Like, I want to see businesses taking the precautions and the steps necessary to make sure that their employees and obviously customers as well, that they're safe. The other thing, though, is I think these higher costs will also kind of challenge the idea that, you know, as consumers, that we should always be able to get what we want for less money. I think the natural outcome here is that we're going to maybe end up consuming less, which I see as a good thing, versus just mass consumption because things are cheap and easy, you know?
Yeah, I think you make a good point. And if it makes us think, do a double take and think about our spending and makes us be a little more thoughtful, I think that's a good thing. All right, Matt, so there was something else too that fascinated me this week. I was reading about chatbots and artificial intelligence and how so many businesses are having to resort to that for customer service instead of traditional call centers because a lot of those call centers are closed right now. And can anyone really be mad about that? Like, how much easier is it to use a chatbot anyway than to call a 1-800 customer service line, right? And typically, I feel like you get better customer service that way. I just used a chatbot this morning, and it was great. So, yeah.
Oh, who'd you call?
So, it was Amazon on something we talked about, the Prime membership refund. I finally reached out to them, and I was like, hey, I need some of my money back because of the delays in shipment.
Nice.
And they dropped me $20. I know some of our listeners have gotten even more, but I only got 20.
Still worth a call.
Yeah. Not too bad. And I think we are going to see this becoming the norm, right? As AI becomes more ubiquitous and technology improves, just like a lot of companies are investing big money into work from home software right now, the same is happening for companies whose call centers have been temporarily shut down. So I would say expect to see more and more chatbots as your main interface, your main way to be able to get customer service from the companies you do business with.
Hey, Joel, you mentioned, you know, these offices being temporarily shut down. Like, some of these office closures may not be temporary, you know, like these job furloughs might morph into actual formal layoffs. And even as things continue to improve from a health standpoint, like the economic impacts are going to be with us for a long time. And AI and chatbots, you know, they're going to be a way for call centers to reduce costs since paying humans is way more expensive than software. These organizations, they're going to continue to feel the pressure to keep their operations lean and expenses low. And, you know, utilizing technology is a way to accomplish that. And I think this is only going to continue to be the case, too, as this technology improves. And we're not even aware that we're talking to a computer. This technology has advanced so much that it really does sound like we're talking to a person. It's better than talking to the digital assistants on our phones and in our modules at home. I won't say their names. That way they don't activate if you're listening to this out loud. But yeah, the technology has gotten so good.
Yeah, it's true. It'll be interesting to see what the long-term effects on call centers are as this technology improves. And of course, something like coronavirus is just going to rapidly accelerate shifts that were already in place, that were already going to happen, but it just way sped up the timeline, it seems like. So on that note, Matt, of things being sped up, it brings up an interesting question. Is the physical office dead? And are people actually going to go back to workplaces in the near future? And that's something on a lot of people's minds. Let's tackle that and then get to falling used car prices right after the break.
All right, Joel, we're back from the break, and we're talking about the future of work. You know, we're asking the question, is the physical office dead? Like, will workers need to actually commute in the future, or are we all going to be working from home? Twitter, they recently made it possible for employees to work from home forever. the same for employees of Square, and, you know, they make the really great Cash App.
Same CEO for both companies, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can see some parallels in how he's running both of those companies, right?
Yep.
Companies all across the country are rethinking how much office space that they'll need, or whether or not they need it at all, you know, like Alphabet or, you know, the parent company of Google. They have backed out of tons of deals to get massive amounts of office space, like millions of square feet. And so that additional space, that's something that they are not pursuing, at least for the time being.
And Matt, I know you were just talking to a buddy of ours who works in a big commercial real estate firm, and a lot of people have been predicting the demise of commercial real estate because of this. So yeah, what was your conversation like with him, and what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, a friend of ours, David, he works for this massive commercial real estate firm, and he's part of like the research division. So this is, you know, what he breathes and lives every single day.
He's always looking at the future.
Yeah, seriously. But in his company, they believe that the immediate need for commercial space will roughly stay the same, because a lot of folks are going to want to get back into the office after working from home, since they kind of miss out on the collaboration, you know, that takes place there. So you couple that with the need for offices to become less dense, you know, with more space between workstations, this should roughly keep things where they are. But man, what we're seeing though long term is, you know, what it looks like to go back to work has changed for a lot of companies as they're being forced to implement new policies and how they're learning how to effectively work from home.
That's a really good point. I hadn't really thought about commercial real estate that as workers come back in, you do actually require more space because people aren't going to feel comfortable working on top of each other, maybe like they were in an open office environment just a few months ago. And so, yeah, I could see actually companies needing a little bit more space, or at least even if they have that flexible work from home, they're going to at the same time probably have to limit how many people can come into the office when the office does reopen, and they're going to have to spread people out. So, yeah, maybe they will continue to use all that space even though they're not cramming as many people into that space. But of course, we'll keep following kind of what's going to happen with the office environment and how that impacts all of us and all of our work lives in the coming months. But Matt, another thing we really need to talk about is that used car prices have gone down quite a bit. Sales in April were down almost 35% and prices plummeted roughly 12%. But from all indications, this seems to be like a temporary effect that was mostly due to the shutdown. And of course, it makes sense that when there's a global health and economic crisis, most people aren't looking to go out and drop $15,000 at a local used car lot. But now that the initial shock of the pandemic is kind of behind us, it's important to note that used car prices have gone down. And if you're looking to score a new to you used vehicle, well, you might want to take advantage of the low prices right now. These used car discounts are not going to last forever, but they are in this really interesting sweet spot where prices have gone down a good bit for people who are in the market for a newer used car.
Yeah, in general, used cars are almost always going to be the best bet for folks who are looking to save money when they're looking for a new to them vehicle. This shift and really, you know, the volatility in this pricing makes shopping around even more important in order to make sure that you're scoring a good price. You don't want to overpay. You don't want to pay January's rate for, you know, a vehicle that you're now purchasing in May. So when the prices are really volatile like that, make sure that you're aware of what the going rates are. And don't forget, too, to have that used car inspected by a mechanic before you make that purchase. That $70 to $125, that could save you a massive amount of money and, you know, the headaches as well. Skipping that step on that front end, that would definitely be an example of being cheap, not frugal.
I completely agree, man. That money is totally worth it because, yeah, buying a car that has a lot of issues, man, how much of a pain is that over time, not to mention the money it costs
you. It makes me think of inspections that we get on our houses before we buy them, right? Like,
yes,
that's just a mandatory standard process of purchasing a home. But, I mean, vehicles, obviously, they're not as expensive as homes, but they're pretty dang expensive. But it's just not a step that most of us take, and it's definitely something we need to implement.
Yeah, completely. And Matt, there was actually a study recently done about the increase in used car affordability. This website, iccars.com, they crunched the numbers on over 6 million used cars that were sold in the past several months, and they found out what makes and models are experiencing the biggest price declines, and therefore the best deal for you, right? So they have a list of the best affordable used cars that we'll link to in the show notes. But if you want to know real quick, the best used cars for under $10,000, the 2012 Honda Civic, a 2011 Honda Accord, and the 2012 Chevy Impala.
Nice. Well, I was surprised to see that Toyota wasn't in the top three. You know, I think maybe Toyota's created too good of a name for itself and it's kind of driven the price up a little bit, whereas maybe Honda is a little undervalued.
Yeah. No, I was surprised to see that too. And it turns out, yeah, in particular, for some reason, the 2012 Honda Civic, the prices have gone way down and it is on the list of most affordable used cars at the same time. So that's a good car for people to look at if that works for how you drive.
And then you might be wondering where to look if you are in the market for a used car. Well, if you're wanting something that's maybe virtually new, you can get a good discount with a car rental company like Hertz, Avis, or Enterprise, as they regularly sell cars in their fleet. With so many fewer folks traveling these days, these companies have taken a serious hit. You know, nobody is renting a car. And last Friday, Hertz, they actually filed for bankruptcy. And experts in the industry, they are expecting them to sell off a huge portion of its fleet. But if you do go that route, definitely make sure to not skip the mechanic if you're going to, you know, purchase a vehicle straight from a rental company.
Yeah, we all know how we've handled rental cars in the past, and it hasn't always been beautiful. It hasn't always been pretty. People tend to drive rental cars a little more aggressively than they drive their own vehicles, right?
Yeah, man. Unfortunately, that's true.
Yeah. So you got to take extra caution when you're buying one of those. But if you're looking at other places for to buy a used car, CarMax and Carvana are just awesome if you want pretty new used cars. And I have a feeling companies like those with delivery services are going to fare even better right now. The way Carvana and CarMax bring the car to you, it's just such a wonderful, pleasant experience. I think people are super up for that, even more so now in today's age.
Well, just folks don't want to have to do the handshake. You know, I think when you expect to go to like a car lot or somewhere in person where you're going to buy a car, you feel that a handshake should be part of the deal.
No longer.
I think we have to accept that that doesn't necessarily need to be a part of the transaction anymore. You can just a nice little signature here and there, say thank you and get out of there.
Yeah. And if you're looking for even cheaper used cars, right, which Matt, you and I are totally up for, Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace are still two of the top places for people to go to search for used cars that are even cheaper. Because why drop $20,000 or $25,000 for a used car when you can get something really solid for under $10,000? Just like that IC Cars list explains, there are great cars for under $10,000 that you can buy. And those are the kind of cars that CarMax and Carvana just don't typically specialize in. So if you're looking for something less expensive that works for how you drive, Craigslist and Facebook Marketplaces are two places to go to search.
Man, that makes me think of the need to eventually have multiple vehicles in our own personal family's fleet. You know, as our kids get older, we've got a lot of kids between us, between you guys, between us. If you're looking at $10,000 vehicles, that's a lot of money tied up in depreciating assets sitting out on the street.
I think things are going to change so much, though, from between now and when our kids are actually getting ready to drive on the road. One, I don't even know if they're going to want to drive.
Yeah.
And then two, I think there are going to be so many other options, including, who knows, self-driving cars. In the next 10 years, are they going to get good enough to where our kids are just literally calling a self-driving car to pick them up and take them where they want to go? I could totally see that as our future.
That'll be like the new subscription model. You pay to be a part of the service, and it gets you access to wheels whenever you want it.
So many miles a month.
Via your smartphone,
yep,
or watch or whatever people are really into then.
Man, things are changing quick.
And I wouldn't necessarily call us visionaries. I don't think we can be considered futurists, but maybe those are some light predictions from us.
Yep. Self-driving in the next 10 years, I'm going to say it's definitely on the table.
Yeah. All right. Well, man, that's going to be it for this episode. We'll put our show notes up on the website at howtomoney.com.
All right, buddy. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.